March 1929. The Grand Hotel Belvedere in Davos, Switzerland. Ernst Kassir, 54, sits composed in the second row, white-haired and dignified, the embodiment of philosophical tradition. Then Martin Heidegger arrives in an athletic suit, deliberately snubbing his reserved front-row seat to mingle with students instead. This wasn't just a debate, it was a collision between two incompatible visions of what it means to be human. And it was the culmination of a decade that had seen four brilliant minds, Wittgenstein, Heidegger, Benjamin, and Kassir, tear down and rebuild Western philosophy from its foundations. Their ideas still shape how we think about language, existence, and culture today. Tech companies process language using Wittgenstein's insights. Therapists draw on Heidegger's existentialism. Media scholars quote Benjamin. Multiculturalism owes a debt to Kassir. What happened in those 10 years between 1919 and 1929? How did philosophy become magic? World War I didn't just kill millions, it murdered certainty itself. The Enlightenment promise of progress lay shattered in the trenches. Einstein displaced Newton. Darwin erased fixed human nature. Freud revealed we don't even know our own minds. As philosopher Max Scheler put it, for the first time in 10,000 years, humans had become completely and totally problematical to themselves. Into this void stepped our four thinkers, each facing personal crisis in 1919. Wittgenstein gave away his fortune. Heidegger abandoned his Catholic faith. Benjamin fled his father's expectations. Kassir rode Berlin's streetcars through revolutionary chaos. They shared one burning question. What does it mean to be human in this broken world? Wittgenstein sought clarity through logical analysis. Heidegger explored existential structures of being. Benjamin pursued cultural criticism. Kassir developed a philosophy of symbolic forms. Each man's personal struggles shaped his thinking. Wittgenstein's profound isolation, Heidegger's rustic Black Forest hut, Benjamin's precarious wandering, Kassir's stability threatened by rising anti-Semitism. By 1920, all four recognized language as philosophy's central problem, but diverged dramatically. Wittgenstein's Tractatus argued meaningful propositions picture facts. When Russell claimed there are at least three things in the world was meaningful, Wittgenstein refused. Only on this paper, there are three dots made sense. Nothing meaningful could be said about the world as a whole. His conclusion? Philosophy itself is nonsense, a ladder you climb, then discard. Heidegger believed Descartes had separated mind from matter, leaving us viewing the world through frosted glass. His solution? Realize there is no box. Benjamin drew on Jewish theology. Original language had necessary connections to what it named. Language doesn't express us, it expresses itself through us. Kassir saw language as one symbolic form structuring experience. The moon in Greek means the measuring one, in Latin, the shining one. Language doesn't just label, it creates concepts through autonomous mental activity. By 1923, the philosophers had found their distinctive spaces, and these physical locations shaped their ideas in surprising ways. Heidegger retreated to his newly built cabin in Tottenauberg, a wooden cottage in the Black Forest that would become legendary. There, isolated from academic demands, he developed his breakthrough concept of Dasein, human existence as being meaningfully addressed by the world. He critiqued the falling of those who avoid authentic self-confrontation through consumer goods, career goals, and unquestioned beliefs. Kassir found his sanctuary in Abi Warburg's remarkable library in Hamburg. Unlike ordinary libraries organized alphabetically, Warburg's collection followed good neighborliness with four sections: orientation, image, word, and action. This taxonomy aligned with Kassir's developing philosophy of symbolic forms, revealing how ancient peoples constructed rigorous conceptual systems through totemistic logic. Benjamin faced continued setbacks. His planned journal stalled, his translations languished unpublished, and he had essentially no publications beyond his ignored dissertation. With family bonds severed and no income, he resorted to buying and selling books between Berlin neighborhoods. His essay on Goethe's elective affinities reflected his personal entanglements, offering a critique of bourgeois marriage trapped between illusory freedom and dominating fate. Between 1925 and 1927, our thinkers confronted philosophy's blind spot, love. Heidegger's Dasein was fundamentally individual, in each case mine. Then he fell for 19-year-old Hannah Arendt, and his philosophy fractured. Could love split his eye from within? He arranged clandestine meetings, but couldn't reconcile this experience with his radical individualization. Unsatisfied, Arendt left to study with Carl Jaspers, eventually developing a philosophy countering Heidegger at every turn. To his running ahead into death, she replied with birth. To his solipsism, she offered plurality. To his worldly critique, she gave amor mundi, love of the world. Benjamin's thesis on German tragic drama was rejected by Frankfurt University as incomprehensible. For him, modernity's tragedy was its fall from true language into moral judgment, creating profound mutants where nothing speaks to me anymore. After rejection, he felt liberated from academic ambitions that had merely terrified him. Meanwhile, Wittgenstein's teaching career ended when he struck a student hard enough to make the boy faint. After fleeing, he briefly considered joining a monastery before designing his sister's Vienna townhouse, a building she called Logic Made House, projecting arcane exclusion rather than inviting openness. When Heidegger and Cassira met at Davos in 1929, the stakes transcended philosophy. A month earlier, Nazi-affiliated groups had complained that Germans learned Kant from foreigners like Cassira at a lecture Hitler attended. Cassira opened cleverly, questioning what Heidegger meant by neo-Kantianism while implying Heidegger himself might be one. Heidegger countered that neo-Kantianism reduced philosophy to mere knowledge of science. The climax came over freedom. Cassira advocated liberation through symbolic forms, art, science, language, that transcend biological limits, creating immanent infinitude through cultural creation. Heidegger demanded embracing the nothingness of Dasein and the harshness of fate. Only by confronting death and meaninglessness could we achieve genuine freedom. Cassira urged casting off anxiety through culture. Heidegger demanded casting off culture to confront the liberating nothing at existence's core. Meanwhile, Benjamin enjoyed his most successful period in Berlin, finally gaining recognition as an original critic. Wittgenstein returned to Cambridge, where economist Piero Scroffa challenged his rigid views on language, inspiring him to explore natural language's diversity. The decade ended, but its reverberations never stopped. Heidegger became a Nazi party member and rector at Freiburg, infamously declaring, "The Führer and self and he alone is the German reality," a stain he never fully acknowledged. Yet his ideas continued reshaping existentialism, phenomenology, and postmodernism. Cassira was elected rector of Hamburg University, then forced to flee when Hitler seized power, eventually writing The Myth of the State to analyze totalitarianism's mythical underpinnings. Benjamin suffered a nervous breakdown in late 1929, never again had a fixed home, and committed suicide in 1940 while fleeing the Nazis. His unfinished Arcades project became foundational for cultural studies. Wittgenstein returned to Cambridge, transforming philosophy again with his later work on language games. Despite profound differences, these four magicians recognized that philosophy must respond to modernity's crisis by rethinking its fundamental assumptions. In an age of disenchantment, they sought new forms of enchantment, not through returning to pre-modern certainties, but through radically questioning human existence and its relationship to language, history, and culture. Their magic still works on us. When you question whether words capture reality, you're walking Wittgenstein's path. When you feel anxiety about existence itself, you're experiencing what Heidegger described. When modern life feels alienating, you're channeling Benjamin. When you recognize different cultures as distinct ways of being human, you're thinking with Cassirer.